You and feels like it's happening again. I feel the BPM, I feel the music. I'm hard to please, but I feel. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Record Watch, the new best musical variety show on the internet. Every month, we will recap the biggest stories happening in the music industry, review the best and most notable releases of every month, and try our best to be entertaining along the way. In this episode, we will be looking on the just past August, which means that we should be talking about what 2025's pick was for Song of the Summer. Drumroll, please. Wait, what? Yeah, so apparently the biggest song in America for the entire summer of 2025 is an English-language K-pop song by a fictional girl group from an animated Netflix movie. And you know what? In a vacuum, this could be fine. Even if the song was mediocre, which I kind of think it is. Please don't get mad at me for that take, by the way. Instead, blame the people on Letterboxd who overhyped a perfectly average kids movie into something it was not. Also, if we're being real, the Saja Boy songs from the movie are way better than the Huntrix songs. Fight me, hunters. Anyways, it's one thing for a movie like Encanto to dominate the charts in the winter, where new music is few and far between, and the charts themselves are relatively weak after catching their annual case of Mariah Carey. Stay safe this December, I heard it's contagious. But for the entire music industry to fail to compete with Hollywood soundtracks during the summer, a time where most people spend their days blasting auto-generated Spotify playlists in public to the annoyance of everyone else, it demonstrates how truly dire the state of mainstream music is in 2025. And what sucks even harder is that I can't even suggest better alternatives on the charts right now that should be replacing K-pop Demon Hunters. The Hot 100 is so unbelievably stagnant right now that most of the songs that were in the top 10 right now this August were already there 5 months ago. In fact, one of the songs there, Lose Control by Teddy Swims, debuted on the charts in August of 2023. For context about the musical landscape of August 2023, Guts by Olivia Rodrigo had yet to be released, the Kendrick Lamar and Drake beef was still private information, the biggest album in America was a Barbie soundtrack, and Taylor Swift had only re-recorded two of her albums. Oh, and on the topic of Taylor Swift, this might be a little underground information, but I think she has an album coming out.
This morning, a new era for Taylor Swift.
This is my brand new album.
We're elegant. We're luxurious.
It's giving our fans a look inside the life of a showgirl.
The Empire State Building posting this photo. Mysterious billboards popping up in Times Square, leading to a Spotify playlist.
5 million pre-saves on Spotify.
Come on, honey, this is show business.
The life of a showgirl. Exclusive edition only at Target.
Taylor Swift, a true indie darling. Honestly, there's a good chance that the Taylor Swift industrial complex is responsible for 25% of the US GDP, so I don't even know how much I can blame companies for her shameless Taylor posting. I mean, I still won't buy the 57 different vinyl variations, but as someone who actually enjoyed Tortured Poets Department, I might pick one up. I just hope she doesn't choose the worst song from the album as the lead-off single, which she does consistently. Why does she have a problem with picking singles?
I don't know.
In less interesting news, Justin Bieber, everybody! That's right, Justin Bieber surprise announced and released Swag 2, the not-at-all-awaited sequel to the absolutely unremarkable Swag from earlier this summer. It boggles my mind that there are people who would choose to listen to a Justin Bieber double album instead of any of the work done by his talented collaborators propping him up. This is absolutely baffling to me, especially when both Swag albums combine to be over 2 hours long.
Leve's third studio album had a lot to live up to since the success of her last album, Bewitched. This album is both a love letter to classic jazz, while also taking the idea of classical jazz and turning it to a more modern audience. Leve takes the listener on a journey through her life, empowering her through the ups and downs of a relationship. When it comes to a bossa nova-inspired modern pop production, Leve is second to none, creating beautiful instrumental soundscapes for her beautiful vocals to lie upon. Her true compositional strength is best shown on the track Cuckoo Ballet. This is a mashup that she does for all of her albums of all of these songs into this beautiful compositional piece where you can understand all the songs, but also they all flow very seemingly into each other. Thematically, A Matter of Time is a fitting title. The phrase is often used when something needs to change, and Leve's lyrics target elements of our society that are due. Lover Girl is the special notation around the idea that when women fall in love with a man, they have to be head over heels, and how that kind of ends up sucking them into this life of only dating a man and just being with them constantly. Snow White is a commentary on the beauty standard of women needing to always be this skinny, perfect, and impossibly beautiful to always be accepted. Silver Lining is the commentary on how men are supposed to propose first, and Leve says it's a matter of time with that, and now she, along with women, should be able to also propose. Forget Me Not and Tough Luck are commentaries on how toxic masculinity fails in society, but Mr. Eclectic also shows that being manipulative is also a problem in our society. For the final song of the regular album, Sabotage, Leve takes all of these problems in society and doesn't blame them on society themselves. She takes them all for herself and claims that she's the one who sabotages her own relationships. This album has such a strong message of change for the sake of our future that change must happen now. Going past the theme itself, let's just talk about the songs on the album. Clockwork is a very wonderful opening to the album with a very fun vocal stimulation of chimes of an antique clock. The album quickly picks up after Clockwork into one of the most fast-paced songs on the album, Lover Girl, which is impossible not to clap along to. This is followed by the saddest song on the album, Snow White, creating such a powerful message about how women are viewed. The next song, Castle in Hollywood, for me, has one of my favorite choruses on the song, creating this really fun and fast-paced movement. Carousel's opening of her vocally creating a carousel of emotion will always be a beautiful thing to listen to. Silver Lining is one of those songs that I really loved, and just the powerful kick right before the chorus, it would be amazing to hear live. And I mean, I'm very thankful that I did get to hear that drum kick live. Too Little Too Late is mostly an uneventful track until the end when it ramps up. This track differentiates itself from normal Leve by creating a sense of internal panic. Cuckoo Ballet is something that I already covered at the beginning, but it is truly a beautiful track. I also recommend for people who like to study to listen to her second account, Mei Mei the Bunny, where she just posts instrumentals of all of her songs and sometimes different versions of them. Forget Me Not, for me, is the song that gets kind of lost in the shuffle of everything. Not to say that's a bad track, but it just doesn't stand out compared to the rest of her songs. Tough Luck is when Leve takes a step back from her classical jazz and goes into this more pop feeling. That is, until the end, when she starts to create this beautiful slur of words and these amazingly belting high notes. A Cautionary Tale takes a step back into her jazz roots after Tough Luck for a great story warning about toxic masculinity. Mr. Eclectic, for me, is one of my favorite tracks, as it's this very bossa nova bouncy song about how men can also be manipulative to try and get with women and how that's also not great. Clean Air contains Leve's best vocal performance on this album, where her voice carries the instrumentals so well that she got accused of using AI for this song. Sabotage is the ending to the story of A Matter of Time, and it shows Leve blowing up at this idea of society, and also there is a fair jump scare warning for the song. Finally, there is a standard edition of the album with a bonus track of Leve singing one of her favorite songs, Seems Like Old Times. I had never listened to the song Seems Like Old Times until Leve covered it, and I really love the way that it starts off slow and it slowly picks up throughout, creating this very fun just jazz standard. Overall, I wouldn't just recommend A Matter of Time by Leve. I would say it is a must-listen-to album for anyone out there, because everyone has experienced relationship problems in their life, and I think it's a matter of time for society to make some changes.
Up next, the sophomore album by Ethel Kane, Little B. Tucker, I'll Always Love You. Little needs to be said about Ethel Kane and her star-making 2021 debut album, Preacher's Daughter. The sort of genre-blurring opus you would barely expect from a well-established artist, let alone someone's full-length debut that serves as album one of a three-part conceptual narrative. That being said, my expectations for her have slightly dampened in the last year or so. Some of that can be due to the Pervert EP, which was released earlier this winter. Believe me, I genuinely appreciated the experiment. Some of the textures were gorgeous, and there's a real thematic core worth exploring. But I hope you understand why a 90-minute ambient album hasn't exactly been in constant rotation with me. Another factor for this is her pending separation from record label Prescription Songs, which is run by Dr. Luke, a decision I have absolutely zero issues with, but also coincides with Kane's detachment from making more pop-friendly material. This only personally disappoints me because I'm still one of the few people who absolutely adore American Teenager and appreciates her ability to craft hooks and songs with real melodic payoff. But all of my trepidation out of the way, is the album still great? Well, yeah, absolutely. Willoughby Tucker feels like both a natural evolution of Kane's world-building established on Preacher's Daughter, while also demonstrating how her more drone-inspired, sprawling soundscapes can work in a narrative context. And I want to address that narrative first and foremost. Set before the events of Preacher's Daughter, Kane paints a greater picture of the Alabama small town her character would eventually leave behind for the empty promises out west, which for some of you who know that last album would eventually lead to her demise in pretty graphic detail. With that graphic ending always lurking in the background, I appreciate how Kane's writing humanizes her downfall by centering on her loneliness and insecurity. The album opens with two character portraits, Janie and F*** Me Eyes, the former name for Kane's childhood best friend, who she seems leaving her behind in life in the favor of newfound love, while the latter describes her female classmate as a self-determined Americana-styled seductress, which, when delivered from Kane's own biased perspective, you can notice the jealousy and underlining insecurity that pours through every line, only amplified by the constant judgment of sinners that weighs heavily on Ethel Kane as the titular preacher's daughter. Among these outside figures is the album's namesake, Willoughby Tucker, an undoubtedly gorgeous, masculine heartthrob who enraptures Ethel Kane so much that she already envisions marriage and children together by the song Nettles. But as the album progresses, you learn that Willoughby may be as internally tortured a character as Ethel Kane herself, whether it be from similar familiar trauma and expectations, worries about financial stability, or underlying depression that neither he nor Ethel Kane can manage on their own, even if she imagines multiple scenarios where her love can pull him back from the brink on the album's back half. And as such, the album is inherently more melodramatic than Preacher's Daughter, which has some real narrative weight to it. Its stakes are more internal, somewhat fantasized, but when framed with such universality and empathy, with writing that captures the many nuances of small-town upbringing, Ethel Kane managed to pull it off remarkably well, especially when Waco, Texas is such a phenomenal closing song. And as for the sound of the album, I definitely appreciated the dip into 80s Americana with F*** Me Eyes, with its huge waves of guitars and synths. The ambient moments are extremely well balanced with some captivating textures, but what I appreciated more was how Kane integrated the more dissonant tones to create powerful atmospheric slow crescendos, including the haunted numbness of Dust Bowl or the theatrical swooshes of High Winds on Tempest. That being said, while the compositions feel bombastic, the album's sequencing is well constructed, and there are enough narrative details to keep you invested, 75 minutes is a bit of an ask, especially for a 10-track album that includes three instrumental interludes and has two songs at the end that eclipse the 10-minute mark. And again, this could all just be my aversion to genres like slowcore that stretch melodic motifs over long run lengths, or just the compromise between her pop and drone sensibilities. But when you have intimate character pieces like Janie and Knock at the Door both cross the 5-minute mark, the momentum can flag really quickly. I can see why her pop-leaning audience might struggle to digest this album. Even then, this is still a great album. Probably a little bit harder to pick multiple standouts from in comparison to like a Preacher's Daughter, definitely a project that requires a front-to-back listen as opposed to sampling songs piecemeal, and even then, the reliance on slowcore structures and extended crescendos may test your patience. But if you can dig into Ethel Kane's world-building, her sound and storytelling are unlike many others working today. Definitely worth a listen and highly recommended.
Up next is Wishbone from Conan Gray. Directly inspired from 90s pop and alternative rock, Conan Gray's fourth studio album, Wishbone, thrilled fans and redefined his career when it released this August. Following his 2024 electropop album release, Found Heaven, Wishbone feels more like a callback to his earlier work from his debut album, Kid Crow. The album features 12 songs and follows themes of heartbreak, self-discovery, and finding your identity. Gray faces his own childhood trauma and how it affected his relationships in songs like Romeo, Class Clown, and Nauseous. The album features three musicals titled The Wishbone Trilogy, which features Gray himself alongside his friend Corey Fogelmanis, portraying a coming-of-age love story, playing the characters Wilson and Brando. The trilogy stretches from This Song to Vodka Cranberry and Caramel, even though I think it's pronounced Caramel, and explores themes of emotional vulnerability and finding your identity. Gray has described his process of writing this album to be very personal, produced over the course of 2 years while simultaneously touring for Found Heaven. He apparently wrote 300 songs for this album and had to narrow it down to 12. But I think a lot of us would not be too upset if he pulled a Taylor Swift and released an extended cut with at least 30 more songs. Wishbone debuted at number 3 on the Billboard Top 200, making it Gray's highest ever charting album and his third album to make the top 10. The leading single of Wishbone, This Song, was released on May 30th. This song reflects on the pain of a past relationship and how certain songs that used to be tied to happy memories can now evoke pain and sadness. Gray writes about how you can't escape a memory that's captured through a song, and how living through the pain and loss you've experienced through song can be very powerful. The second single that followed up this song was released on July 11th and was titled Vodka Cranberry. Gray writes about the sadness and confusion of seeing an ex move on. He paints a picture in the song portraying him as the bad guy, breaking off a relationship that has already been over. The album has a lot of impact on the fear of vulnerability, coping mechanisms, and the acceptance that can follow when looking back on a difficult situation. Caramel is the third single to be released in the album and the third song in the trilogy. The song reflects on the nostalgia and pain of looking back on a past relationship. Gray mentions the idea of having an ex burning in your memory and how deeply it can stick with you. Gray has stated how the 90s era country artists have played a large role in influencing Wishbone. From The Chicks to Reba McEntire to Deanna Carter, many of these artists played a role in shaping Gray's music career and have served as early inspiration for him. Another artist who has served as a huge inspiration for Gray is his close friend Olivia Rodrigo. Olivia Rodrigo blew up after releasing Sour and starring in Disney's High School Musical, the musical, the series. Gray has claimed that he took inspiration from her heart-wrenching lyrics, specifically from her song Driver's License, which turned into him writing Vodka Cranberry. He said that he even chose the name of that song because Vodka Cranberry is Olivia Rodrigo's favorite drink. The release of Wishbone has resulted in many successes and has been appreciated by fans all over the world. Many people have appreciated the authenticity in this album. Fans have shown a lot of support for the LGBTQ+ representation in the Wishbone trilogy videos and how Gray's music has reached out to support these groups through music throughout the years. Gray kicked off the Wishbone Pajama Tour on September 11th in Ohio and plans to travel across 12 different states. The tour will also reach international fans in Mexico. Wishbone feels like a return to Gray's debut album, Kid Crow, and encapsulates the feelings of nostalgia, self-discovery, and acceptance. The album has a bittersweet feeling of moving on and highlights how we all tend to remember our anger and bad situations, but can also recognize the good moments and how these moments shape us into who we are. I really enjoyed Wishbone, and I think it was my favorite Conan Gray album out of all the ones I've heard, which is sad because it's the only one I haven't seen live, but that's okay, and I definitely recommend listening to it.
Up next, the newest album by Rise Against, Ricochet. So have you ever heard of the phrase, the road to hell is paved on good intentions? Yeah, that's kind of what I felt with the new Rise Against album, and believe me, I did not want to say that. Rise Against made some of the best melodic hardcore albums of the 2000s, and while they did soften their edge across the 2010s to some questionable results, they came back in a big way with 2021's Nowhere Generation, one of the best punk releases of that year. And as such, I've been looking forward to new Rise Against material, especially as they got independent for the first time in decades and rediscovered good production. Hell, when I heard that the new album Ricochet would be produced by Catherine Marks, whose previous credits include Boy Genius's The Record and the last two Manchester Orchestra album, the latter being one of my favorite acts currently working in modern indie rock, I was completely sold. And then I heard the album. And while I'm all happy for Tim McElrath and his newfound artistic kinship with Andy Hull of Manchester Orchestra, this album proves that what works for an atmospheric, electronically enhanced, but organically bombastic indie rock band doesn't exactly translate well to hardcore punk. What's more concerning is just how overall lifeless the album feels. Compositions are stuck in first gear, and Tim McElrath gives an all-time worst vocal performance. I don't know what happened there. I legitimately saw him live only a couple weeks ago, and he still can go. He does sound a little out of breath, but he can go in specific songs, so the fact that he sounds this bad on a studio recording, something went deeply wrong here. I don't know if it was a vocal production or what, but something went wrong. And when there is no firepower to carry Rise Against lyrics, which can devolve to populist sloganeering over more precise political statements, the album falls completely flat. I don't know if this band has run out of creativity to give, but I just wish they gave their all because that sure as hell was not that.
Coming up next, by Between Friends, Wow. Wow, by Between Friends, is simply just a very fun trip. On their sophomore album, the sibling duo demonstrate their ability to produce interesting, party-ready pop mixes. I love how well Brandon and Savannah Hudson's harmonies take the listener on just this beautiful journey. The duo described this project as a, quote, midlife crisis turned into an album, with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 showing how the duo longs for the weekend, or, very nice, yearning to be young again. By placing this kind of idea of a midlife crisis on into like the Stan's album, Between Friends really showcases the idea of escapism, I feel, and, you know, putting yourself out there on the dance floor when everything's not okay, and it's really just a good commentary on what life is like. On the surface level, the album is a very fun and energetic track, but as you dive into it, a whole new meaning is shown. The highlights for me on this album are Jam, Parking Lot, and American Bitch. Wow by Between Friends is really just a fun album, and there's a song for everyone, so please, if you have the time, check it out.
Up next by Somber, I Barely Know Her. Somber's debut album, I Barely Know Her, was released on August 22, 2025. The overall theme of this album is the feeling of not getting over someone, and the lyrics on this album reflect a very emotional and personal side of Somber. The album has 10 tracks, with most calling to the sounds of alternative and indie rock. This album is very impressive coming from an artist so young, garnering him the award for Best Alternative Video at the 2025 VMAs for the single Back to Friends. The album as a whole represents the feeling of longing for someone. Crushing is about the feeling of missing someone and being scared to grow apart from them. This is a great opening track to the album as it immediately ties to the overall theme and message. 12 to 12 has definitely been my most played song on this album. The fourth single released from the album, the song is very catchy and a different vibe from the rest of the songs. This song showcases a different side of Somber, as it is a more upbeat and funky style rather than an emotional and slower song. Lyrically, it is about insecurity and being invested in someone that may not be invested in you the same way. Back to Friends was the first single released from this album, and it's the most popular. It's about losing someone that used to be so close to you, and now they act like you don't exist. Dime is about the feeling of wanting to be with someone, even if it is platonic, and includes a cute lyrical flip where he calls this girl a dime because she's a 10. The second single, Undressed, is another track that blew up across social media. Lyrically, it is about not wanting to have an intimate relationship with anybody else. The closing track on this album, Under the Mat, which uses the common phrase, leave a key under the mat, to imply that there is still an opportunity for his relationship with this girl to work out down the line. This sense of wondering is a great way to close out the album, as it demonstrates the overall theme of longing for someone and not getting over a relationship. Somber's I Barely Know Her is an excellent debut album from the young pop star because of its emotional depth and unique instrumentals, with my favorite tracks being Crushing, 12 to 12, Back to Friends, Dime, Undressed, and Under the Mat. If you haven't listened to this album yet, I highly recommend it.
Next up is Ego Death and The Bachelorette Party by Hayley Williams. Widely known as the lead singer of Paramore, Hayley Williams released her third studio album this summer, titled Ego Death and The Bachelorette Party. It contains 18 songs with 3 accompanying music videos. The album features elements from various styles she's dabbled in previously, such as alternative rock, indie rock, and synth pop. Williams added 17 of the 18 tracks, not including Parachute, to her official website on July 28th, only accessible to fans who entered a 16-digit code that was sent after purchasing a product from her hair dye company, Good Dye Young. The songs were later added as 17 singles on August 1st. The collection of songs was named Ego by many music publications. The album feels very cohesive. Even with 17 songs starting as singles, they all come together in a very unique way. Williams encapsulates the feelings of self-examination along with anger and frustration in her writing. The vulnerability and openness makes the album feel relatable and intimately human, helping listeners connect to the songs and the meanings behind them. The album marks a monumental moment in Williams' career, as it's her first album to be released independently after previously being tied to a 20-year contract with Atlantic Records, which she signed when she was only 15 years old. On the opening track, Ice and My OJ, she writes the lyric, "A lot of dumb motherfuckers that I made rich," calling out the studio, which she was finally able to break away from. The title track reflects on Williams' hometown of Nashville, Tennessee, and how it's changed through the years. Ego Death at a Bachelorette Party connects with fans expressing the feelings of self-identity and ego death. I think this album was a great follow-up from Williams' previous work, as it really shows off her songwriting abilities and her singing abilities, and I can't wait to see what she does next.
And that's all we have for the debut episode of Record Watch. If you're curious about future episodes, they will be coming out monthly on Orange Television Network, so be sure to subscribe and tune in. But until next time, we've been Record Watch, and we're going off the air.